Item one, what a difference a day makes. Item two, there is a word for what's going on here. And item three, look, this is to some degree how markets are supposed to work, just not quite so dramatically. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace. In Cleveland, Ohio, today, WCPN IdeaStream. I'm Kai Ryssdal. Good as always to have you along, everybody. So look, how we doing? Feeling better after today's upswing on Wall Street? 567 some odd points on the Dow. You got less agita? It's great. It really is. But there is a word I want to run by you as we get going. Not a word of the four-letter variety, surprisingly, but very much a word of the markets, no matter how much we might have thought we have moved past it. And it is directly related to what's been going on the past couple of trading sessions. Marketplace's Sabri Benishour has been on the volatility story today. Hey, Sabri.
Hi, Kai.
All right. So give me the market report, I guess, if you would, for today, would you?
Yeah, well, you know, look up a chart of, say, the S&P 500, and it's like a mountain range in Mordor, just jagged movements all up and down. The Dow fell more than 560 points at the open, then it rebounded more than 900 points in less than a half hour. There were swings of several hundred points over the course of the next couple hours, and of course, the Dow ended up 2.33%. So this is indeed what we would call a very volatile day in the market.
It is volatile. It is maddening. It is scary to look at. It is also, as I said, completely normal, right? This is what markets do. They go up and down.
They do. Movements, even big movements, are normal. Between 1900 and 2016, for example, we got, on average, a decline of 5% or more about three times a year. Now, those declines would take, on average, a month and a half. The declines we saw on Friday and yesterday and what we saw today, that all happened much more quickly. One reason things moved so quickly is the automation of trading. Mm-hmm. Robots, you know, it's much more fast and furious because robots are basically doing it.
Yeah, and we've got Ryan Kailath coming up on that in the bottom half of the program. But let me ask you this, though. Have we forgotten what volatility is all about? Because things have been calm or on the upside volatility for a very long time now. Have we just forgotten about it?
Well, sort of. I mean, the economists that I have talked to have said, yes, we've gotten a little bit lulled into a sense of complacency. But I would put this in a bigger context. Over the past 30 years, volatility in the markets has actually been falling. It has. George Perks is a macro strategist for Bespoke Investment Group. He made this point to me. He said, markets have become much more efficient, much more cheaper to buy and sell into, and automated, as we mentioned. And so in general, this has smoothed markets out over the long term.
So what we've seen, especially in the last 5 years, is periods of prolonged calm and then sudden, very sharp, very short spikes higher in volatility. So overall, volatility is lower. But when volatility does ramp up, it feels much more drastic because we go through these prolonged periods where not much happens and stocks sort of just gently tick up every day.
So that's why the past few days have been so jarring, because we got used to basically nothing happening.
Okay, so give me the why. What's up with the higher volatility right now?
Well, there's more to be volatile about right now. That's how Kyle Woodley explained it to me. He's senior editor at Kiplinger.com. Over the past year, it's been very tra-la-la, everything is fine.
We've had a prolonged period of just a Goldilocks economic situation. The economy's still been good during that time. Unemployment has continued to be low during that time. And so there wasn't any volatility because there was no reason for it.
Now, however, we actually have things to think about, maybe to worry about. Inflation, maybe. Higher interest rates than previously thought, probably. More government debt, definitely. So as the macroeconomy becomes more unpredictable, and not bad per se, just more unpredictable, more things happening, so too are the markets that are built on that foundation.
Okay, you got 15 seconds. Is more volatility a bad thing?
No, not necessarily. You know, you make money when you buy and you sell. Here's some advice from T. Rowe Price's head of equity trading, a guy named Clive Williams, who's a super calm guy, despite everything.
There's nothing that I would change, or I am changing personally, because we've seen some more volatility in the markets.
So if you have a 401k, long-term investment, stick with it. Don't freak out.
Don't freak out. Good lessons there. Sabri Benishour at Marketplace, headquarters east in New York. Thanks, Sabri.
Welcome.
On Wall Street today, up, down, and all around, major indices got back about half of what they lost yesterday. We'll have the details when we do the numbers. Volatility can, of course, be an essentially natural market's function, right? Traders get nervous because traders get nervous, or as you'll hear in a little bit, trading robots decide it is time to get nervous. But volatility can be induced, I guess, is the word. Exogenous, economists might say, which is where the politics of this economy come front and center. We are now 2 short days from another potential government shutdown with no deal in sight. I should say here that a shutdown appears unlikely because neither Republicans nor Democrats seem to have the stomach for it. But here's the thing. We talk about monetary policy a lot on this program, the Fed and what it does on interest rates, right? That's monetary policy. There is also, though, fiscal policy, government taxing and spending, an equally important slice of the economic pie, and it, too, plays into what's going on in the markets. Marketplace's Kimberly Adams has been on that part of the story. We've got her live on the line from Washington. Hey, Kimberly.
Hi, Kai.
All right, give me the latest on the shutdown thing, would you?
So basically, like you said, nobody really wants a shutdown, especially in this market, although the president did say today he might be up for a shutdown if there's no immigration deal. The White House has since walked back those comments. The Senate is working on a 2-year budget deal, hoping that will clear some of the air. And in the House, there's currently a fight over defense versus non-defense spending for a bill. Any of these ideas would basically add more to the deficit on top of those tax cuts and the deficits with those. And this is not the kind of money that you can just offset with spending cuts to discretionary programs.
So this is, don't let me put words too far in your mouth, but our fiscal policy is a mess, yeah?
Yeah, a mess that's being kept afloat by deficit spending and an increasing national debt, which means more government borrowing. The U.S. government is on track to borrow about $1 trillion this year, which is up 84% from last year. And so you can say, sure, that's all fine as long as people want to keep buying U.S. treasuries. And we'll hear more about that up next. But right now, investors are starting to worry about what all that borrowing is going to do. Is it going to push up inflation? Also, I should say, Treasury Secretary Steve Mnuchin said today he didn't think all the borrowing was really affecting markets that much.
Let me throw a phrase at you then. If we're piling on all this extra debt and there's more government borrowing, there is a thing that happens where government debt crowds out private investment. Explain that and why it's important.
So, right. If you are dumping all, if the government is borrowing all this money to dump into the economy to pay for things, it makes it more competitive for other borrowers. And that can either push up interest rates. And also paying the interest on all of that debt can also mean the government has less money available for other things that might stimulate the economy. Take infrastructure, for example. The Congressional Budget Office says we're probably going to spend at least $5.6 trillion on interest in the next decade. And that's money that could be going to other things and money that's going into the economy that competes with everybody else who wants to spend it.
Which gets us to this idea of inflation, which people are talking about a little bit more now because of the wages news on Friday. That was one thing. But also, you know, bond market, as Tracy Samuelson is going to tell us, bond yields are rising a little bit. Talk to me for a second, if I could coin a brand new game show here. What is Jerome Powell thinking, the brand new chairman of the Fed?
So I'm going to leave that game to you, but this is what markets really want to know right now. The Fed was on track to do possibly 3 more interest rate hikes this year. Now it's a little bit less clear what the Fed is going to do. If inflation goes up too much, the Fed raises interest rates to slow it down, which raises the cost of borrowing for everybody, you, me, businesses, and the federal government. So to bring it back from Wall Street to Washington, a deal to avoid a government shutdown the day after tomorrow will probably have to include some kind of additional spending financed by debt in a time where, because of market conditions the government helped create, it's more expensive to borrow.
And just to put the cherry on the cake here, or the on the ice cream cone, it's another $1.5 trillion with the tax bill. So it's a whole lot of money. Kimberly Adams, live for us at Marketplace on the East Coast, maybe not headquarters, but who knows, in Washington. Thank you, Kimberly.
You're welcome, Kai.
Okay, bonds. As Kimberly was talking about, all the money that's been coming out of stocks the past couple of days has to go someplace, right? And we are not at the stuff it under your mattress point by a long shot yet. So what's happening is that a lot of money is going into bonds. U.S. Treasuries, federal government debt, are considered essentially risk-free. So investors park their cash there. They get a bit of interest, not a lot, but a bit. And they sleep easy, knowing that their money is going to be safe and sound. There has been a dip in bond yields, the return or interest that investors get on their money, as all that money has gone into treasuries the past couple of days. But overall, bond yields have been rising pretty steadily the past couple of months. Marketplace's Tracy Samuelson tells us why and why it matters.
If you bought a 10-year treasury bond today, the yield, a.k.a. the return on that bond, would be about 2.8%. That's up from about 2.1% back in September, which I know doesn't sound like a big increase, but it shows investors want to get more interest in order to loan the government their money. And why is that?
The economic conditions in the United States are improving.
Brian Nick is chief investment strategist for Nuveen, which manages assets worth about $970 billion.
The outlook for growth has improved, and believe it or not, the outlook for inflation is also improving.
Because if people and companies are making more money, they may spend more and prices will rise. So investors are expecting that inflation will also rise.
If inflation goes up, it erodes the value of the cash that you're getting in those interest payments.
So Kathy Jones, chief fixed income strategist at Charles Schwab, says investors want higher interest to compensate for rising inflation. Now, add into this that the government is going to be issuing a lot more bonds this year than it did last year. One reason, to pay for recent tax cuts. Torsten Slok is chief international economist at Deutsche Bank.
The total amount of issuance in treasuries in 2017 was around $600 billion. And in 2019, that's going to basically roughly double. Then, of course, this opens up the very important question, who's going to buy all these treasuries?
To tempt investors to buy, the government has to sweeten the deal, offering them better returns. And because treasury rates are the base for lots of other interest rates, that could mean more expensive borrowing for consumers who want to buy a house or a car. I'm Tracy Samuelson for Marketplace.
Yesterday was what they call a global rout in the markets. The Nikkei in Tokyo off nearly 5%. Germany, France, and the UK all down as well. Interestingly enough, the two big mainland Chinese indices also lost 3 or 4%, which is unusual. Chinese markets are mostly protected from economic events in the rest of the world by design. But it turns out there are some costs to becoming a player in the global economy. Marketplace's Scott Tong has that one.
There's a Chinese saying about globalization. Open the window and you let in flies. Beijing is conflicted about the outside world. Yes, it wants trade in Apple factories and Starbucks, but no to overseas stock crashes. Stephen Roach, former chairman at Morgan Stanley Asia, says it's now too late for China to really close itself off.
China is joined at the hip to all the major economies that are actively driving globalization, and it doesn't get special dispensation when there's a global issue like we saw with this equity market correction in the last several days.
Still, Beijing does limit exposure to foreign economic germs. There is a cap on outside financial investments, and only big institutions can do it for the most part. These controls walled off China from the so-called Asian financial flu of the 90s, says Dinny McMahon of the Paulson Institute think tank.
The single most important lesson that China's regulators took away from the Asian financial crisis is that to be able to control risk in their own financial system and their own economy, they needed to control the ability of capital to freely move in and out of the country.
China is trying to open more. Outside investors can now buy some Chinese stocks through Hong Kong and bonds, but progress is uneven, says Donald Strassheim at Evercore ISI.
Think of China's opening their financial markets like a dimmer switch rather than an on-off switch. They're not about to either shut it off entirely or open it up entirely.
Lots of countries do this. These capital controls go in and out of fashion. And with this sell-off now, more countries may want to shut their windows facing Wall Street. I'm Scott Tong for Marketplace.
Coming up,
the biggest negative impact on my business has been Amazon.
Saying goodbye to Cleveland's big fun toys. But first, let's do the numbers. Dow Industrials up 567 today, 2 1/3%, 24,912. NASDAQ up 148, 2 1/10%, 71 and 15 there. The S&P 500 advanced 46 points, 1 7/10%, ended at 2695. Let me give you some context here because it really matters. Last year on this date, February the 6th, 2017, Dow was at 20,052. That's about 24% lower than where we are today. The NASDAQ about 25% lower on this day a year ago. S&P 500 about 17% lower. So those are some gains we're looking at here, folks. Bond prices fell. Yield on the 10-year Treasury note. Tracy Samuelson was talking about this. Up to 2.80%. You're listening to Marketplace. This is Marketplace. I'm Kai Ryssdal. Adam Smith, the founder of Economics as We Know It, talked about this thing called the invisible hand, right? How, and yes, I'm generalizing here, how market forces work to bring order to our economic interactions. There is, if I can extend the analogy to a little bit here, an invisible hand in stock markets too, but order is not necessarily what this one brings. The scariest part of the day yesterday, if you remember, was right around 3 o'clock New York time when the major indices pretty much just fell off the table and then bounced back just as fast. Marketplace's Ryan Kailath explains automated and algorithmic trading and what they're doing to stock trading as we know it.
Here's what most stock traders probably sounded like when the market hit its low yesterday.
When you execute a trade, it's not going on the floor of an exchange anymore. Floors don't really have traders. It's being done in a computer system, in all likelihood, in New Jersey.
Okay, that's actually the computer room in our office here in New York. But Bernard Doniffer's point stands. A program is handling most of your trades.
These automated trading models make the world go at speeds we really haven't seen before.
Doniffer teaches finance at NYU Stern, by the way. Michael Greenberger of the University of Maryland explains why the need for speed.
There is a belief that the quicker you can get your trades in, the quicker you can anticipate moves in the market.
He says what's important to understand is robots, algorithms, they don't generally cause the sort of steep declines we saw yesterday. Instead, they take whatever trend is already happening and amplify it.
The problem is when the market goes strongly in one direction, mostly down, the algorithms anticipate a collapse of the market and they quickly start selling off stocks, and it's very hard to turn that machine off.
The finance world got hip to this after the flash crash of 2010 and started updating the algorithms to recognize and halt such activity. But yesterday, Greenberger says, it's likely some human beings noticed what was happening first and rerouted the machines. In New York, I'm Ryan Kailath for Marketplace.
Okay, so we've talked mostly technical stuff up till now, right? Fiscal policy, fundamentals, monetary policy, the bond market. Now, we're going to talk about feelings, or to use the technical term, consumer confidence. Spending by or on behalf of consumers in this economy accounts for 70% of all the economic activity we have, and our confidence in the economy directly affects that spending. So it turns out, feelings do have economic consequences. Marketplace's Erica Barris has that one.
Since 2009, consumer and business confidence has known mostly one direction, up. But perception can be a powerful thing.
It matters because people think it matters, yes. And it can affect confidence in many different dimensions.
That's Robert Shiller, a Nobel Prize-winning economist and professor at Yale. Shiller says an economy doesn't change course overnight. But with the rise of the 24-hour news cycle and social media, every shift is magnified.
So quite plausibly, that makes us more vulnerable, and we might be overreacting.
And overreacting can skew the way we think about spending. Andrew Caroli is a professor of finance at Cornell University. He says as people watch their 401k balances move up and down,
I worry that excessive volatility in the markets somehow may lead them to distort the decisions that they would normally be taking.
And normal these past few months, with markets breaking records, has been to spend more on big ticket items like cars and appliances, even if it's meant saving less and taking on more debt.
There's almost like a feedback loop that is working from the stock market back to consumers.
Mark Zandi, chief economist at Moody's Analytics, says things like low unemployment and rising wages are what really matter. About half of Americans don't even own stocks. Even so, changes in the market affects them.
There are times when stocks matter, when they're going up fast or down fast. You know, it does have a big impact.
And that's mattered the last few days. I'm Erica Barris for Marketplace.
I saw on Twitter the other day that a toy store here in Cleveland was closing. Didn't think much of it until I clicked through the article and saw that it was Big Fun Toys, run by a guy by the name of Steve Presser. It brought me up short because we've had Steve on the program probably 5 or 6 times in the past 5 or 6 years, checking in every now and then to see how things are going. And I always thought things were going pretty well. So since I found myself in Cleveland today, we called Steve, asked him if he had a minute, and he was good enough to come down to the studio. Steve, thanks for taking the time.
Oh, it's always a pleasure to talk to you and see you.
So I read that in May you're going to shut down this store after 27 years.
After 27 years, Big Fun is coming to an end on Coventry.
That makes me a little sad. What's going on?
It makes all of us a little sad. It's just the two words I use, it's time. Kind of like an old car that you love so much and you change the tires, the oil, the tune-up, and now it's a $3,000 engine job and the car's only worth about $1,000.
What's going on that made it, you know, made you need the engine job, I guess?
Well, it's the, you know, it's a new era. I mean, it's a whole different marketplace out there, pardon the pun. But the biggest negative impact on my business has been Amazon. And for us to survive, as you know, brick and mortars can still survive in this marketplace, you need to change your model. And I've continuously changed my model. Size my store, how I operate, what I do, I need to do other things.
We should say here, you've been explicit in what I've read, that this is not about the Cleveland economy.
No, it's definitely not about the Cleveland economy. My buddy in Chicago closed after 38 years. Hmm. There are certain markets where our stores can do well, but it's not a Cleveland economy. Cleveland is doing great. I mean, look what's going on in our fair city.
Yeah, there's lots going on. We've been coming here for a number of years.
Absolutely.
And I should say here, just to give you the plug, there's a store in Columbus that's staying open, right?
Yes, Big Fun in Columbus is staying open. It's in the Short North, which is a vibrant, vibrant district between the campus, Ohio State, and the Capitol.
Was this a sudden realization on your part, or did it kind of creep up on you over time?
This has been creeping up on me for quite some time. You know, this is a really difficult decision for me to make, and I've had lots of conversations with my wife, Debbie, with people I look up to in the business world. They know what I've been going through. We've done alternative ways to keep us afloat, from financing from traditional banks to non-traditional to secondary and tertiary lenders.
So 27 years in business, you're still having to go to the bank to get operating capital.
I would be blessed and happy if banks would still lend me.
I should tell you, we said in our morning editorial meeting today that I was going to talk to you because the store was closing. And at least one of our editors, I was on the phone, so I didn't quite hear it, but at least one person and maybe two in the office said, I love that store. I hear about that store all the time. I can't imagine what it's like for your customers.
Oh, it was heart-wrenching. It was a very cathartic week for me in the sense that over 100 people lined up when we had our store closing sale. It started last Friday. I brought out bagels and hot chocolate for the crowd, and we opened the door.
Let me tell you, it's chilly in Cleveland.
It is, you thin-blooded West Coast people. Yeah, so I shook hands with every one of the people who came through the door, over 100 people, and it was 15 degrees.
Let me ask you to sort of step back for a minute and look at the big picture economically with what's going on in Washington, with the tax law that has happened, with the deregulatory environment from the White House. How are you feeling about the American economy? I mean, you're a small businessman trying to get by.
I have not seen anything yet. Will I feel it? Well, if I was still in business, or I will be in business, I think I'll feel something. But I, you know, again, the definition of small business, and we've discussed this before, is 150 employees. Most of us small business operators are 10 and under. The tax consequences that Washington is providing for small businesses really doesn't trickle down to us. Yeah. We don't see it.
Steve Presser, Big Fun Toys. Thanks for coming in.
Kai, it's always a pleasure. Thank you so much.
This final note on the way out today, directly related to where we started, the idea of volatility in the stock market. The thing you need to know is that the volatility index, which you've heard much talk about the past day or two here and elsewhere, is a tradable thing. You can buy or sell countless financial products based on what is called the VIX, which gets me to this item from Bloomberg News today. One of the people who helped invent the VIX 25 or so years ago, Devesh Shah is his name, he said today of all the derivatives based on the VIX estimated to be in the trillions of dollars worth, quote, in my wildest imagination, I don't know why these products exist. Who do they benefit? No one, except if someone wants to gamble. Then, okay, just go gamble. End of quote, caveat emptor on that one. All right, Wall Street Today we did to the upside is where it finished. Our digital team includes Sarah Menendez, Donna Tam, and Tony Wagner. Ben Heathcote does digital video for us. Sarah Muti is our executive director of digital. Sitar Nieves is the executive director of On Demand. Special thanks today to the folks here at WCPN IdeaStream in Cleveland for putting me up on such short notice. I'm Kai Rizdal. We will see you tomorrow, everybody, back in Los Angeles, where, by the way, it is warmer. This is APM.
All over the country,
we need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.